Support comes from Country Financial, hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates on both the federal crop insurance program and the Farm Bill, as well as how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the sixth day of January 2015. Happy birthday to my brother Tim. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. That with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way, your Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey, will be here with a look at today's agricultural news, and we'll discuss the crude oil market with Harry Cooney. He's at GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois, right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Corn futures were down a penny in the nearby March contract at $4.05 a bushel. The May at 4.13 and a half, a penny and a quarter lower. And July at 4.20 and a quarter, down 1 cent for the day. September at 4.22 and three quarters, down three quarters. December of next year at 4.28 and a quarter, down three quarters. And the March of 2016, down a penny at $4.36 and a quarter. From the soy complex, nearby beans at $10.51, settled 11 and a quarter higher. The March at 10.55 and three quarters, up 10 and a half cents. The May at 10.61 and a half, 9 and a half higher. July at 10.66, up 8 and a half. And August futures, $10.63 and a half, up 8 and a quarter. September contract, 10.43 and a half, up 6 and a quarter. Next year's November, $10.28 and three quarters, 3 and 1/2 cents higher for the day. Bean meal on the day at 370.80, up $1.80. And the bean oil this afternoon, a penny lower at 32.69. From the wheat pit in Chicago, soft red at 5.91 and three quarters, up 2 and three quarters. July there at 5.98 and three quarters, up 2 and three quarters as well. And the hard red Kansas City at 6.31 and a quarter, and the March 6 and a half higher. July at 6.37, up 5 and three quarters. Live cattle futures $165.95, and the February 27 and a half cents lower. The feeder cattle for the day in the January at 224.50, down $1.17 and a half. The March at 220.45, down $2.92 and a half. And the lean hogs on the afternoon in the February contract at $78.52 and a half, $1.40 lower. This, of course, is the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Checking the outside markets at this hour, crude oil at $48.13 a barrel, $1.91 lower. The March there at $48.61, down $1.89 for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.72 and 6 cents, that's up 2 and 3 tenths for the day. And the gasoline on the RBOB at $1.35 and 4 cents, 2 and 7 tenths of a cent lower. Natural gas at $2.94 and 6 cents, 6 and 4 tenths of a cent higher for the day. Ethanol futures $1.49 and 6 cents. That's a dime and 8 cents lower on the afternoon. Checking out the Dow Jones Industrial Average at this hour, 17,328, down about 122 points. The gold futures at $1,217 or thereabouts, up $13.50. And the U.S. dollar index at 91.750 is up 0.128. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area on this Tuesday afternoon. Areas of blowing snow, partly sunny. A high of 17 degrees, wind chills between negative 1 and 4, west winds at 9 to 11. They'll gust to 18. Tonight, areas of blowing snow, mostly cloudy, a low of negative 3, wind chills between 8 and 18 below. West winds at 13 to 17, gusting to 26. And then Wednesday, areas of blowing snow, sunny. It'll be cold, a high of just negative 1 degrees. Wind chill values between 19 and 27 below. Blustery with a northwest wind at 14 to 20 miles an hour, that gusting all the way to 30. We'll have more on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Well, it is, of course, a Tuesday afternoon, the 6th day of January. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, is on the phone line to take up the commodity markets with us. Wayne, I hope you had a very good winter break. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, it was a very enjoyable holiday, and it looks like the bad weather for traveling is going to come along here. The rain did this week, and fortunately, everybody had good weather to travel with around Christmas.
That's absolutely right. I don't mind traveling, I suppose, in the bad weather. That's kind of normal for me when we get out on the Corn and Soybean Classic Series, and that's what will happen Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week, and Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. Thanks, by the way, to Dave Dickey, who will be filling in for me as I'm out on the road. You can learn more about those on our website at willag.org. Look for the Corn and Soybean Classics or the CropSciConferences.com. Walk-ins are welcome across the state of Illinois. And Wayne, I will be in Peoria and Malta, which is outside of DeKalb, along with Moline this week, and then in Champaign and Springfield and Mount Vernon next week. What are you hearing about the marketplace? Let's turn our attention back to the commodity markets and what things will be like as we head into the January 12th reports coming up next week.
Well, of course, Informa stuck their numbers out there today, Todd. They had the soybean production at 3969. That was 11 million bushels over the NAS November estimate. That was basically right in the ballpark, not seeing much change at all. And the corn at a 14.425, up 18 million bushels from the November estimate from NAS. So basically, that didn't cut back on acreage like a lot of people are thinking about, because of the FSA differential and what NAS has said. So I think that sort of was weighed a little bit heavy on the corn today, that they didn't cut that corn acreage.
Yeah, so are your expectations that they're right?
Well, Informa has a very good history of predicting what the government will say. Maybe not what their end number will be, but for that report, saying what it will be. So we're thinking along the way that they've got a little bit of insight.
Is this a turning point if this is truly the case, or is it more of a steady as we go if that number is actually correct?
Well, I think we pretty much hung in today as a steady as you go. The corn basically being unchanged, down a penny, but the beans still looking at the weather in South America. But I think if the government actually comes with these same numbers come Monday, we'll see a little bit of sell-off.
Yeah, we'll see a sell-off. We have a whole bunch of numbers that are due out on Monday, of course. The acreage figures will come out along with the crop production numbers, the final numbers for what was produced from the United States last year. Grain stocks reports are due out as well. They'll give us an idea of how much usage we've had in the beginning of the year and, more likely, what's actually left in the bin. What do you think about those numbers?
Well, I think that, we've had a lot of our usage was pretty front-loaded. We were pipelines are very, very empty on the beans. We know that we've crushed a lot of beans. We know that the exports to China and the loadouts have been very front-loaded here along the way. So I think we're going to see very good usage of the first quarter as far as the beans go. And, of course, I think along the same way, we have been very aggressive with livestock. And I think our feed usage has been very good. I don't think our exports, they lagged a little bit behind because you can only load so many boats a week. And if we loaded all those beans out, we didn't have room to load quite as much corn. But very aggressive usage in the first quarter here.
Is there any simple message that you're giving farmers this week? For instance, stand to the sidelines and wait for January 12 or something else?
Well, I think, the one thing that we still want to look at a little bit is going into this report is a possibility, if you don't have any new crop stuff sold, that we maybe need to put some puts below the market in both the corn and the beans. If we can get to your point of $4 cash corn for fall or $10 cash beans, and do it with options so that you're not locking in that low level if the weather changes later. I think that's one of the things we want to look at. Also along the way, if it's getting here and you haven't cored your bins and everything along the way, these levels, we got back to $4 cash corn that way. It's not a bad place to at least sell enough corn to core your bins.
Thanks so much, Wayne. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson, of course, of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. By the way, I've already recorded Commodity Week because I'll be on the road, and I don't want to burden Dave too much. At the end of the week, we talked this morning with Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I. Should be up on the website pretty soon, I would think. Well, hopefully this afternoon or later this evening, so you can check that out. Commodity Week with Daryl Good at willag.com. Speaking of Dave, here he is now with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, a federal mediator has agreed to intervene in stalled contract talks between West Coast dock workers and their employers. Political and financial pressure has been building as each side blamed the other for the slow movement of billions of dollars worth of cargo across the docks at 29 seaports that are a vital trade link with Asia. The ports from San Diego to Seattle handled $892 billion in imports and exports during 2013. Members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union have worked without a contract since last July. The Maritime Association is accusing workers of slowing down deliberately, while the union says bad management means that, among other things, truck beds are not available to move containers of goods. The two sides remain far apart on wages and work rules. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says that trade negotiations will take up a bigger chunk of his time in 2015, especially the 12-country Asian Trans-Pacific Partnership. The 12 countries account for roughly 40% of global economy. A major sticking point in the trade talks for agriculture has been reluctance by Japan to further open its agricultural markets. Last summer, several U.S. groups signed a letter calling on the Obama administration to drop Japan from trade talks unless Japan puts a better deal on the table that lifts barriers for pork, rice, wheat, and dairy products. Little has changed since then. U.S.-based food processor OSI Group LLC has suffered a new setback in China. The Shanghai Food and Drug Administration says that it is destroying batches of questionable products that were recalled from OSI division Shanghai Huxi Food Company, a former supplier for McDonald's Corporation's China business. OSI, based in Aurora, Illinois, said in a statement that it is disappointed in the agency's actions and that it does not want the disposal to be seen as an admission of food safety problems. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Well, yesterday I was off, thanks to Dave for filling in for me. You heard me say happy birthday to my brother, Tim. Earlier in the year, in May, in fact, I turned 50, and I went in for my normal, regular, every-year checkup. And, of course, they said, hey, you turned 50. Guess what? It's time to do a colonoscopy. Males and females get that at 50 years of age. And I asked them about it a little bit and wanted to share, not much, but a little with you, because they called me this morning and wanted to know how my colonoscopy had gone. I thought that was kind of funny. And it was a little funny because they were laughing when they first got on the phone, probably just talking the nurses among themselves there. But I told them I was a little embarrassed from yesterday because they were laughing today and I didn't know what that was about. Never mind that part. She did inform me about one little unique thing about the colonoscopy I had yesterday. They used a different technique and wanted to know how it went. They used carbon dioxide instead of room air for the colonoscopy and wanted to know what the problems I encountered, if any, after the colonoscopy might have been. I told them none. Zero. Absolutely none. The only thing that really happened, in fact, I would have been here in the afternoon had I not taken the day off, thinking I wasn't going to feel too well. I got there at 7:45 a.m., probably was home at 10, and by 10:30 I felt fine. That's when the effects of the anesthesia wore off completely. So it was a really good and easy day. So why am I telling you about this? Well, probably because many of you fear that colonoscopy a little bit. No big deal. Actually, it's a 20-minute procedure. I was in and out. It was simple, quick, and easy. Now, there are complications that can occur every few thousand people if they happen to nick your bowel. But other than that, and you have to take that risk into effect, what I went through, at least yesterday, was really simple and easy. I guess I'm trying to say you might want to have yours too, if you're that age. Hey, I know it's more information that you wanted to know, but somebody has to say something about it on occasion, and since I had mine yesterday and it went great, why not have yours soon? FYI, here's why the message is important. The American Cancer Society says your lifetime chance of getting colon cancer is 1 in 20. Let's turn now our attention to the markets that deal with crude oil. And Harry Cooney is with us. He's from Growmark out of Bloomington, Illinois. Harry, thanks for taking the time. Boy, what a volatile marketplace this is, and what a unique ride crude oil has had over the last year. Can you tell me more about what's going on?
Well, good afternoon, Todd. That's exactly right. What a ride we've had. You have to go to really long-term price charts to really stand back and look at the magnitude of the move that we've had. I mean, we were up at $107 a barrel there in mid last year, probably around mid to late June. And we've tumbled all the way down to under $50. Today we traded down to around $47.50 in the crude oil. So it has indeed been quite a tumble. And it's not unheard of. When you look back at 2008, we topped out at $147 a barrel in the mid-summer, so it was a very similar type of topping action for the timing of it that year compared to this year. And then we dropped all the way down to about $33 a barrel. So the magnitude of that drop was much larger in dollars than this one here has been, even though this one seems like it's been quite large, and it has been.
It's been large. Do you think 33 is in the crosshairs at any point, or 38 or something along those lines?
I think somewhere in the 40s here we'll probably find some fairly decent support. There's a long-term trend line that comes off of the lows in crude oil from back in 1999. From, if I remember right, it was back in late 2001, and then off those same lows in 2008-2009. That trend line comes across in the middle 40s, so we're not too far away from that trend line. My guess is that the market will probably find some stability once we get down just a few dollars lower or so here. And my guess is that we could hit a low, and then we could have some type of a bounce off that low.
Is this simply a result of OPEC's decision to continue to pump oil?
Well, that's a very good question. Very good question. In fact, you know, back around Thanksgiving, the big OPEC meeting occurred, and that's where they really made a change in their philosophy, meaning that they used to always take and try to defend price. Now it seems like they're going to be just trying to defend their market output share. However, the market had already been in a downtrend since about, since that peak back there in June, but especially since Labor Day weekend, the market had really begun to sell off. What's been happening here beyond OPEC is the dollar has been moving higher. The U.S. dollar has made just a big move to the upside. The dollar has taken off probably since about the 4th of July weekend. The dollar has taken off. What we're finding is some of the European currencies like the euro has been falling to multi-year lows, thus allowing the dollar on a teeter-totter effect to go up, and it appears that there are some of those other countries in Europe that are maybe having a weaker economic situation than we had previously thought. So thus, their currency gets weak, our dollar goes up, and that the dollar going up puts inverse pressure on our crude oil prices to the downside.
I was thinking the crude oil was priced in dollars, though, for currency. Is that
crude
not
the
case?
Is. Yes, crude oil is. Crude oil is priced in dollars. Here in the U.S., it is priced in dollars. But the inverse relationship, and in many commodities, it's not just energies, but it tends to be that inverse relationship with even the grains, the metals. But what's been interesting this week alone here, that the grains and the metals are actually rallying some, especially yesterday. The grains had a big day up, as you well know, but the energies have stayed very weak. So once this oil price gets tumbling to the downside, it seems like, especially in a contra-seasonal move like this one, it seems like it can continue much further in time and price than any of us imagined once it began.
All right, so what you're telling me is that production total number of gallons is fairly large, and that's pushed price down. The dollar is fairly strong, so we can buy more crude with it, and that also seems to have pushed some price down because it looks like the gallon is cheaper in price because the dollar buys more, right?
Yeah, and you hit the thing there that I hadn't even talked about yet, the overall production of crude. Over 9 million barrels a day now here in the U.S., domestic oil production has surged to such a level that it's hard to say that we're energy independent, but we're a lot closer to being energy independent than we ever were in the past 10 to 20 years, let's put it that way. It seemed like they're back in 2004, 2005, 2006, there was a lot of talk of the peak oil theory, so meaning that the U.S. was peaking out in production of oil, that it would start a slow decline, never to come back. And that's what got the oil markets really going to the upside back there in like 2006, 2007, and then eventually peaking in 2008. What we're finding, though, is that peak oil theory, there was some fallacies in it. Then these horizontal drilling methods came along and such, and it just really spurred on a lot of production here in the U.S. So you hit it right on. It's not just the dollar rally either. It is also the domestic production. And now in other areas around the world, they're starting to do some of this horizontal drilling and such. And so we're going to find other areas around the world can find more oil than what they thought they could with these new methods.
Do you suppose that lower prices will stop some of this horizontal drilling or other places that aren't as efficient economically?
You know, that's interesting, because ever since we dropped under about $80 a barrel, we started reading articles saying, here's how much this country has as a break-even, or this oil field has as a break-even. All I can say is that we have seen new rigs, drilling and such, the numbers of those slow down. But I can't say even at these prices yet that the ones that are actually out there already in production have stopped. I just can't confirm any of that type of action. So it'll definitely dampen new ones at these price levels. And again, we just came down to these price levels in the past month or two. So my guess is you'd have to stay down at these real lower, much lower levels for an extended period of time to really dampen those oil wells for good. Let's put it that way.
Hey, Harry, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney, of course, is with Growmark out of Bloomington, Illinois, and joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Frozen Yogurt Day. It's also St. Dorothy's Day, patron of brewers, gardeners, and florists. On this day in agricultural history in 1617, Prospero Alpini died, an Italian physician and botanist. He is said to have introduced coffee and bananas to Europe and was among the first to artificially fertilize date palms. In 1685, Charles II, King of England, died. Known as the Merry Monarch, he introduced tea to England during his reign. And on December 23rd of 1675, he issued a proclamation suppressing coffee houses. The public response was so negative that he had to revoke it a year later. In 1796, John Stevens Henslow was born. A British clergyman and botanist, he was a mentor of Charles Darwin. To help get farmers to apply scientific methods, he gave lectures on the fermentation of manure. He also showed Irish farmers how to extract starch from rotten potatoes during the potato famine of 1845. And in 1898, Rudolf Carl George Frederick Leuckart died, a German zoologist and pioneer in the modern study of parasites. He was among the first to trace the life history of tapeworms and the liver fluke. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. To Tuesday afternoon, Don Day joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. Normally, we would jump straight to South America, Don, but boy, it's going to be cold here, and I'm going to be on the road in Peoria and Moline and Malta, the northern half of the state of Illinois, over the next 3 days, and it looks like I'm going to have some really frigid weather. Can you tell me about it, please?
Oh, yeah. We are looking at a lot of very, very cold, dense air settling into the middle half of the country, all the way to the east coast and from the east slopes of the Rockies. This is another wave of Arctic air where the source region's coming right out of Siberia. So this is the real deal, and it's going to be several days of severe cold. Most of the snow is going to be of the lake effect variety, so we're not expecting a lot of precipitation. But boy, do bundle up and be ready for severe cold.
How cold will it be?
Well, we're expecting daytime temperatures in some areas, not leaving the single digits, going below zero, highly likely.
That'll start, I think, Wednesday, maybe our coldest day in our part of the world here in Champaign. How widespread is this through the nation?
Well, basically, as you go from the Mississippi, Missouri Valley, Northern Plains states, Western Corn Belt, through the Great Lakes, that's where it will initially come in. Then it's going to push south all the way to the Gulf Coast, all the way into Florida, and then along the East Coast. And with the real cold air getting settled up around that New England area, the interior Great Lakes is where the core, the coldest temperatures will be.
Once this finger makes its way into the United States, into the that deep into the U.S., is it more likely that it will happen again and again over the rest of the winter season?
Yeah, I do think that this we're not done with this. The pattern that we see developing in years past and previous patterns does tend to indicate that when we see this pattern, when we have in the past, that there will be more episodes of cold this month and February. I would especially watch out for late January and early February. We will see a warm-up after this cold wave, but it's not going to be anything like that warmer weather we had in early December, where we had a good 2 weeks of mild temperatures. Any warm-up will be brief.
All right. Turn your attention to South America, where they're in the midst of their growing season. Any problems that have developed over the holiday season?
Well, they've seen some rain. Good to see. The forecast for rain isn't quite as good here for at least Brazil going into the next week to 10 days. There's some rain, but it's going to be a little bit drier than normal. Argentina, on the other hand, is poised to have some really good chances of good precipitation here in the week ahead.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us, Don.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Dave Dickey will be in my seat Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week as I'm on the road with the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. Walk-ins are still welcome for that. You can find the details at cropsciconferences.com. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.